Hello, this is Anil Kumar from Back to the Bible radio broadcast. On today's program, Dr. Neufeld continues his series, Journey to the Cross, with a closer look at what happened immediately after Jesus was arrested in the garden. So let's go back to the Bible as we examine today's message, Friday, the Journey Goes on Trial.
There are great moments in history where a bit of ground, a tiny piece of geography, represents the turning point in history. When Julius Caesar crossed the Rubicon in 49 BC, that was such a time. Roman law forbade any general from crossing the Rubicon with a standing army, for to do so would threaten the government of Rome. A Roman general crossing the Rubicon with a Roman army was considered an act of treason. The minute Caesar crossed, the die was cast. He would either be executed for his act or triumph over the Roman Senate and change history. Jesus' entry into Jerusalem was just such a moment. The moment he entered on a donkey, fulfilling the prophecy of Zechariah 9:9, the die was cast. And then when he crosses the Kidron Valley and goes to a place where Judas was sure to find him on Thursday night, a place where no one was likely to raise a disturbance, the chain of events were inevitable. But we've been saying from the outset that Jesus orchestrated, directed, and controlled the events he was living out. He had already told his disciples this not long before. Matthew 20:18 records him saying, "See, we're going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be delivered over to the chief priests and scribes, and they will condemn him to death." Jesus' journey to Jerusalem is his statement that he had deliberately chosen the events that were now unfolding. In that evening, they had celebrated Passover in the upper room, sung a hymn, and gone out into the night. They walked out of the city down the steep embankment into the Kidron Valley and would have stained the bottom of their robes with the flow of blood of the countless sacrificed lambs. They mounted the other side where Jesus prayed in anguish in the Garden of Gethsemane. By the time Judas arrives, there's blood on the bottom of Jesus' robe and blood on his forehead from the intensity of his prayer. How deeply foreboding of the events that lay ahead. What follows deep into the night is the trial of Jesus that lasted until the break of day. Most of us think that what happened that night was the illegal trial of Jesus held secretly well into the night, and that's true, but it's not the whole truth. Jesus didn't have one trial. Instead, he went through six trials before he was crucified. And so on this day, as we are now so very close to Good Friday, I want to take us into a journey into the six trials of Jesus. We will discover what was done, of what he was found guilty, and the reasons that were given for them to put him to death. When Jesus was arrested in Gethsemane, he was led to the house of a man named Annas. He was the father-in-law of the high priest, who was Caiaphas. Annas had been the high priest, and he clearly was respected and had a great deal of power, probably more power than his son-in-law. Here Annas could make sure that Caiaphas was handling the matter properly, but if anything went wrong, like a real man of power, he would make sure that the blame fell on Caiaphas. Here at his house, we encounter the first trial of Jesus. But this is no official trial. This was an attempt to cook the outcome of the later trial. When men decide to do evil things, they always hold secret meetings to set their strategy. They needed to find a way to so bring charges together so that they could get this by the people. They agreed that the faster they could put Jesus to death now, the better. Caiaphas was given the responsibility to question Jesus there. Perhaps they could get him to say something they could hang him on. And so he questioned Jesus on his teaching. Jesus responded by saying that nothing he had taught was done in secret, but in public. It was a matter of public record. Why doesn't he ask the people who heard him? Immediately, an officer standing beside Jesus hit him in the mouth. Peter was standing outside in the courtyard of Annas' house. He had promised Jesus he would not abandon him, but nothing was normal about this, and the intensity was rising. A slave girl approached him and asked if he was a follower of Jesus, and did she matter? And should her intrusiveness into something that was none of her business give him away right now? He simply denied that he had anything to do with Jesus. Having failed to gain anything of value in Anna's house, they decide to move Jesus to the more official courtyard of Caiaphas the high priest. Here will be the second trial of Jesus, the first one having produced nothing and having failed miserably. Peter is falling outside at a distance, feeling ever more insecure about his role. Here the elders and the scribes were gathered in a more official manner. A new plan is hastily put together. Here they call false witnesses. The name devil, or the Greek word diabolos, is the one who slanders. Slander is very effective. Simply have enough charges, and in the back of everyone's mind is the idea that this man must have done something wrong. So the first man quotes an incident from Jesus' first year of ministry, where he said, "Destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it again." Of course, he was speaking of his own body, but at this moment, twisting and distorting are the order of the day. This witness said, "I heard him say that he's going to destroy the temple and raise it up in 3 days." More witnesses, more twisting of facts, more charges. At this point, Jesus makes no answer to anything that is said against him. Indeed, many of the false witnesses are contradicting each other. There is chaos. Finally, in desperation, for everything is going badly, Caiaphas the high priest demands he answer the question, "Are you the Christ?" And then, "Are you the Son of the Blessed One?" And now, having been quiet, Jesus speaks, because on this one, he will give his reply. He says, "You yourself have said it, and you will see the Son of Man sitting on the right hand of power, coming in the clouds of heaven." He's quoting Psalm 110, verse 1, and Daniel 7, verse 13. Well, the high priest tears his robe and screams, "Blasphemy! We have no need for witnesses. There, right there is the evidence I was looking for." "What do you think?" he asks the elders. And they all say he's deserving of death. And then it is as if Satan himself enters the room, and they lose all sense of dignity. Suddenly they're upon Jesus. They're now slapping his face, punching him with fists, others simply slapping him and shouting like madmen, "Prophesy to us, you Messiah. Which one of us hit you?" And that's how the second trial ends. And it's now time for the third trial. But before we move to the third trial, we must update the matter of Peter standing on the outside. Most of us know this story. By now, Peter has denied he knows Christ 3 times, and as he denies him the third time, as morning is breaking, a rooster crows. Luke tells us that at that moment, the Lord looked at Peter. I'm assuming that after having been beaten and spit upon, they're moving Jesus out of the house of Caiaphas. And as he has just denied Jesus, and as the rooster crows, Jesus is being led out, and the eyes of the two men meet each other. It's more than Peter can bear. He runs out, and as he runs, he begins to weep, not softly, but bitterly. His wails of sorrows must have been heard. He has denied his Lord. Jesus is moved again. He started at the house of Annas, and then the official residence of the high priest. Now he's moved to the Sanhedrin, the Supreme Court of Israel. It's very, very early Friday morning, and they're in a hurry. The entire council is called to an emergency assembly. Here they do not bring the sordid group of liars who testified before. Here they want him only to repeat what he has said in the house of Caiaphas. But they decide they have to be a bit careful in how they ask the question. They have got to get him to repeat the stuff about coming in the clouds of heaven and claiming equality with God. But he might not do it in front of the official Supreme Court, so they start questioning him a bit more slowly. The first question is a little more benign. "If you are the Christ, tell us." And Jesus is coy. "If I tell you, you won't believe me." Ah, this is not going to be easy. But then, surprise of surprise, Jesus is not done. He gives them everything they're asking for without them even asking. "But from now on," he says, "the Son of Man will be seated at the right hand of the power of God." Wow. But there might be a problem. He has only said the Son of Man, not "I will be seated at the right hand of the power of God." He might yet have an out. And now came a question, and when it was asked, they held their collective breath. "Are you the Son of God?" And without even a hesitation, he says, either, he says, "You say that I am," or "Yes, I am." And with that, a roar went out. We have him. This is the blasphemy deserving death. Please, please, my dear hearer, do not miss this point. The reason why Christ was crucified is because he claimed to be the Son of God. In this day, when people say, "I'm willing to accept Jesus as a prophet or a great teacher," and even a great example, you should know why it is that Jesus was condemned to die. He was condemned because he claimed to be the Son of God. I don't know if Judas had been given a ringside seat to that. But we do know that the minute Jesus made his claim, he tried to give the money back that he had gotten, but they refused. They wanted nothing to do with that. Whatever Judas did with the money, that was his business. Judas, recognizing in that moment what all of this entailed, went out and hanged himself. And when we come back, we're going to look at the remaining three trials of Jesus and why it led to his crucifixion.
I think what this introduction has shown us is a sobering picture of the first three trials that Jesus went through. We also see a growing intensity and progression of each trial as the chief priest's hatred and determination to kill Jesus becomes increasingly stark. Dr. Neufeld will take us through the final trials that took place in front of the Gentiles and to the conclusion of the crowds that seemed to seal Jesus' fate once and for all. Back to the Bible, leading people into a dynamic relationship with God. The Bible contains many passages about the topic of wisdom. Here are a few examples. James chapter 1 verse 5 says, "If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given him." Or how about Ecclesiastes chapter 7 verse 12 says, "For the protection of wisdom is like the protection of money, and the advantage of knowledge is that wisdom preserves the life of him who has it." Wisdom is a critically important issue for all believers to understand and apply it. Hopefully, you have had a chance to listen to Dr. Neufeld's recent series on the subject called Skillful Living, focusing on Proverbs, known as wisdom literature. We learned all about what it means to live a wise and godly life. This great series is available on CD for our valuable listeners. To receive it, call us at 9492440070 or email at info@backtothebible.in.